We pick up this week with, I think, one of the best examples of faith in all the entire Bible. And in fact, I've titled the lesson, as you see, A Faithful Father. And of course, this deals with Father Abraham. If you look there in the book of Hebrews, there is probably more verses in the book of Hebrews chapter 11 dealing with Abraham than any other of the faithful that are mentioned here in the Hall of Faith. I think that's for good reason. And in fact, if you look at Abraham's life, as I was talking with Monica yesterday before, as I was working on and reviewing the materials for class, I can't think of a better example of someone when I think of faith to think about. Now, sure, Noah, I think, is a faithful man, as we talked about last week, and Enoch and Abel that we've studied before. I'm not trying to downplay their faithfulness at all. But when you read the chronicles and the stories throughout God's Word, the one that really sticks out to us, I think most of the time in our minds, is someone who is full of faith, truly relying on God in all instances, would be Abraham. And so I think this is one of the greatest stories, and in fact, within this is not just one instance of faith, but several instances of faith that I will try my best to get through in class this morning. Next week, we will continue our study, and in the middle of Abraham also is mentioned faithful Sarah. And so I want to make her our study next week. So I'm not going to deal so much probably with the birth of Isaac and that kind of faithfulness, because honestly, that's not what Abraham is commended for in Hebrews chapter 11. It's for two other instances, that of leaving his homeland Ur whenever God commanded him, and then, of course, the one we think of a lot of times dealing with Abraham would be the sacrifice of Isaac. And so we see those two instances that he is commended of in Hebrews chapter 11. Let's just start out there. Just looking at Hebrews chapter 11, we're going to pick up there in verse 8 and go all the way down through verse 19, reading this passage that commends Abraham and his faith. It says, "By faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in the tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise, for he was looking for a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand in which by the seashore. All these died in faith without receiving the promise, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type." This passage of Scripture deals with the faithfulness of Father Abraham. And of course, Abraham we know as being known throughout Scriptures as the father of the nations, or father of Israel. You go back to all tracing the genealogy, and Abraham is where it all began, really, for the Israelite nation. Obviously, it went back further. And as we begin the lesson, I just want to talk about real quickly about this man named Abraham. Who was he? Where did he come from? And what kind of family was he from? And so quickly, if you look in Genesis chapter 11, you find that Abraham, first and foremost, is a descendant of Shem. And of course, we know from last week's study of Noah, his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah and all their wives, those eight were the ones that were saved through the flood that occurred earlier in Genesis. After the flood occurred, of course, they landed, they worshiped God. We didn't really get into that little episode between the ending of the flood and here where we're picking up with Abraham. But in that short time frame, what happens is the people kind of build together, and there's a Tower of Babel incident there, where they get together and they decide they're going to build this huge tower going all the way into heaven because they are such a great and mighty people. And in fact, they were doing a good job going toward that, God thwarted it, though. Why? Because he didn't want them to get so conceited and selfish that they believed themselves to be greater than him. And that's what they were doing. They were really placing themselves up higher and elevating themselves to be equal with God. And, of course, that's not what is true, and God punished them because of it, mixed up their languages, caused them to scatter. And that's kind of where this ends up here. We don't really know exactly where they all scattered to, but in this reference, with regard to Abraham and his family, they ended up settling in a little area by the name of Haran, or Haran, whichever way you want to pronounce it. Which was supposedly over in the Middle Eastern area. We don't know exactly where it was, but there is a lot of speculation as to where it was, and that's where they settled. So he was a descendant of Shem through all that. His father was a man by the name of Terah, and he had two brothers, one named Haran, which is the same place that where he lived. Don't get them confused. One's a person, one's a place. And the other one was Nahor. And so these are his brothers, that is his father, and you see his genealogy and the descendants that he had there in Genesis chapter 11. You also know about Abraham is that there was a name change. If you go back and study the book of Genesis, you're going to see many stories about Abraham. He takes probably a good chunk of the whole book up with his life, and rightfully so. As I said, the Israelite nation looks to him as being the father of their nation, even though he had a father before him and so on and so forth. Abraham is seen as that father. Why? Because of the covenant that God made with Abraham over in Genesis chapter 17. If you look in Genesis chapter 17, that's primarily where the covenant's made with Abraham about him being a father of many nations. You see a covenant there made with him that he is going to multiply his nations, his seed, and make all the nations blessed from it. Within that promise and that covenant by God with Abraham, God changes Abraham's name. Technically, he changes Abram's name. Abram, what is Abraham's first name, was changed to Abraham. Of course, we usually don't call him Abram most of the time. We call him Abraham. But Abraham's original name was Abram. It was changed to Abraham as a covenant name by God to signify that he had made a covenant with Abram that would last for all of eternity. And in fact, he doesn't even see the fruits of it. It's alluded to in Hebrews 11 that we just read. He doesn't really see the fruits of his covenant because the covenant is actually going to be blessing all nations. And if you go through the fruition of all that, I guess he kind of blesses all nations with his seed and the passing on of this covenant and the passing on of all the blessing to the descendants. But really, that doesn't come to fruition until Christ comes. And so they don't understand the implication of this marvelous covenant back when Abraham and God first made it. But in fact, all nations would do it. The covenant name change there is important just because of that's what he's known as. It's really Abraham. We don't call him Abram. And that's because God changed his name. It's the only name, not the only name change, but the only name change for Abraham that was important at that point, of course. There's several other name changes that you can think of. One, I'm going to allude to it in a second here, is also Sarah. In this same covenant, Genesis chapter 17, God changes Sarai's name to Sarah. So we don't really call her Sarai because of this name change, although she's called Sarai for a large part of the first earlier stories of Abraham and Sarah. But he changes it from Sarai to Sarah for the same reason, because she is going to be the mother of many nations, and the blessing is going to be coming through her seed as well. And if you go through the story of Abraham and Sarah, you see where they can continually kind of struggle with that. I want to get into that hopefully a little bit more next week, dealing with the birth of Isaac and how faithful Sarah was in that promise, even though she laughed at God. We'll talk about that next week. But Sarah, of course, her name was changed. Another prominent name change, if you think about it, was Jacob being changed to Israel. And that was, of course, when Jacob wrestled with God. We're not going to get into that too much this week because Jacob's later on. But Jacob, of course, is also one of the listed faithful. His name was changed to Israel because of the same reason, because he was going to be a mighty nation. And in fact, that was done when he struggled and wrestled with God. Another thing about Abraham, totally hit the microphone. Is that he's a husband to Sarah. I just mentioned this a moment ago. Her name was changed from Sarai to Sarah at the point of the covenant. Another interesting side note about Sarah and Abraham, of course, is they are half brother and sister. If you recall, in the stories of Abraham and Sarah, there are two times over in Genesis chapter 12 and over in Genesis chapter 20. Genesis chapter 12 was before Pharaoh. Genesis chapter 20 was before Abimelech. That Abraham lied. Well, I wouldn't say he lies. He tells a half-truth. He doesn't tell them the whole truth, but he tells them that Sarah is his sister and doesn't say and she's also my wife, by the way. And in both these instances, these men, these leaders, these rulers, Abimelech and Pharaoh, take Sarah in pretty much to make her one of their wives. And that's really what it's alluded to there in Pharaoh. Pharaoh's instance, Pharaoh is plagued. God sends plagues on him and his household and sends message to him saying, hey, why are you taking someone else's wife? In fact, this man is a prophet of mine. You better give her back. And of course, Pharaoh is upset, angry, gives Sarah back to Abraham and says, hey man, why didn't you tell me she was your wife? And of course, Abraham's explanation there is, you know, you're a godless people. And he really, in both instances, he is in fear for their lives. And by not telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth, he is trying to save them and their lives because he is fearful as to what these people are going to bring about. He didn't really tell a lie. And so you don't want to... Sometimes you hear the story and you hear Abraham lied to him. He didn't really lie. He just didn't tell everything. He said, she's my sister, which is true. Because if you look there in the passage, I think it's over in Genesis chapter 20 and verse 12, and explaining to Abimelech after he had done the same thing happened to him. God came to him in a dream and said, hey, why did you take someone else's wife? And he went to Abraham and said, hey, why did you not tell me she was your wife? You know, I wouldn't have taken her if I knew she was your wife. And, of course, Abraham's explanation is, I thought you were a godless person, a godless man, a godless people. I was in fear. Plus, he says there in chapter 20, she is my sister. I didn't lie to you. In fact, she is the daughter of my father, but not of my mother. So she is Abraham's half-sister. And so he's not lying. He just didn't tell them all everything. But I think that's a very interesting side note with regard to Sarah and Abraham's relationship. Of course, after the flood, there was probably a lot of intermarrying between those who were very close with regard to relationships. In fact, if you look over in Genesis chapter 11, I believe that Abraham's uncle, which would be, I believe, Nahor, married his niece, is what the Bible kind of talks about. So there's a lot of little close intermarriage going on there. Of course, probably the rationale there is there's not many humans on the earth. So obviously, when you have only one family saved in the flood, there's going to have to be some intermarrying between those who are a little bit closer in relationships. That wasn't condemned at that point. But Sarah and Abraham were brother and sister. He didn't lie. He just didn't tell the whole truth. And also, I think another interesting note about who Abraham was is that he was the uncle to Lot. And that's important as you read throughout the Chronicles and the stories throughout Genesis, not necessarily for our discussion today, but it's something I did want to make a special note of because of the instances kind of surrounding that. If you look in Genesis chapter 11, and this is something that I honestly didn't really think about until I looked at the writings here and studying of Abraham's descendants. You look in Genesis chapter 11, and it talks about his brothers, and his brother Haran died. Didn't really give an age or a time frame there as to when he died, but it almost indicates there that he died at a very much younger age, and he left his son Lot still alive. And Lot ended up, it seems to be, from you looking at all the passages, and as you think about the whole overall concept, Abraham really took Lot under his roof and under his wing to raise him as his own. And if you look throughout Genesis, you see that as Lot almost becomes somewhat of a son figure to Abraham, because if you look, when Abraham is told by God to go and leave, he does leave, but he takes with him his family, including Lot. And if you look in Genesis chapter 11, it indicates there that Lot's father had died, and it seems there that he was kind of brought under the surrogacy of Abraham and Sarah to be able to be raised. And so it seems that Lot was there with Abraham throughout all that time. And of course, later on, as we know in Genesis chapter 13, there becomes a little bit of a squabble between Lot's people and Abraham's people, their servants. There's too much cattle. There's too much livestock in there. And they actually start infringing and have arguments all the time. And so Abraham says, hey, we don't want to have any kind of arguments between each other. And they end up separating, dividing up ways. And of course, that's when Genesis chapter 13, that Lot decides to choose the valleys of the Jordan, which would be Sodom and Gomorrah, to go and live. And of course, we all know the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, most of us probably do, how Lot and his family were the only ones that were righteous and taken out of that city. Of course, Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt, according to that. But Lot was actually taken out of Sodom and Gomorrah before they were destroyed by God. But of course, Lot is Abraham's nephew, was really watched after him, I believe, as a son. It wasn't just really as a nephew. Of course, they had close families, it seems to be, throughout the patriarchal times. But at this point, really, Lot seems to be there under Abraham's household, under his roof, being taken care of him as his son would. He wasn't his son. And I think that's an important point to make. Abraham didn't have a son at this point. He wanted a son. I think he and Sarah both wanted to have children very badly. But at this point, Lot became kind of their pseudo-son, and in fact was there with them throughout many different things. To our text, if you look in Hebrews chapter 11, think about why was Abraham lauded for his faith. And if you see first and foremost there in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through really about 10, describes there about Abraham's obedience to God and leaving his place, leaving his own country, Haran, to go into another country for which he had not seen yet. If you look at the story behind this, you see that Abraham's obedience is first of all premised on God commanding him to do something. We've already read the passage in Hebrews chapter 11, but flip over with me to Genesis chapter 12 and look at this chronicle. I'm not going to read all of it, but verses 1 through 3, of course, is something I want to refer to here as God's commanding Abraham to journey out and to leave the country that he knew. He says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." And just a specific instruction for Abram to get up and to leave those things which he knew, leave his family, leave his relatives, leave his country, and go where? To the country that God will show him. That's all God says to him. That's at least all we have recorded here. Obviously, we probably don't have everything recorded between the dialogue between God and Abraham throughout their lives. But at this point in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, we read the description and the commandment of God for Abraham to leave his country and to leave his people and to go to a place that he will be shown. God didn't give him a roadmap at this point. God didn't give him certain signs that we can read about in the Word to indicate where Abraham would be going. And in fact, it seems that here Abraham would be having to place all of his trust, all of his safety, his family's safety, his belongings and all the livestock and those kind of things he would be carrying with him, all their safety in the hands of God if he were to leave those things which he knew. And so what we see is the premise here of Abraham's obedience is first of all upon the direct command by God. But also we know that it's because Abraham listened to God. In verse 4, the very first part of that verse, "So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him." This wasn't an instance where Abraham heard one thing or heard it, went in one ear and went out the other ear, okay? Some, especially us men, know how that can be sometimes, because I'll be watching a TV show, Monica will say something, it will go in one ear, out the other, and I'll have, about 10 minutes later, it will come to my mind thinking, I think she just said something I really needed to retain. And I had to kind of go back and say, "Honey, what did you say a minute ago?" Thankfully, in the years we've been married, she's slowly learning that when I'm watching a show I really want to watch, don't talk to me during the show, because I won't remember anything you said. But you know, it's not the way Abraham dealt with it in this situation. It wasn't a half-hearted effort in listening to what God had commanded him to do. And in fact, it seemed that he was very attentive to these things. Verse 4, you see the direct result of his listening. So he had to have understood and really comprehended and focused on those things which God commanded him to do at this point in time. He listened to God. And in fact, after that, he immediately acted. In verse 4, as I said, "So Abram went forth as the Lord commanded, as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him, and he was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Not only did he listen, not only did he hear those things which God said to do, hear that commandment, he acted upon that commandment. The obedient faith that we see here as in the example of Abraham is something that all of us should really step back and think about, what kind of dedication it took for this man to do these things. I know myself, I'm deeply entrenched in the local Montgomery area. Never thought I would be. All right, coming from Kentucky, moving south, you know, going to school at Freed Hardeman in Tennessee, and then ended up moving down here after law school. I had never in my mind had the intent to ever move to Montgomery, Alabama, much less get married in Montgomery, Alabama, and much more than that, have a child in Montgomery, Alabama, or probably at this point live the rest of my life in Montgomery, Alabama, if it's up to my wife. You know, I never had that intent. But now that I'm here, I know it would be very difficult for us to leave. It would be very difficult for us to just pack things up, get on the road, and move somewhere else. Abraham was surrounded by his family. Abraham had lived in Haran, it seems to be, for pretty much his whole entire life. It doesn't say they lived anywhere else. In fact, his father is mentioned to be living there until his death. And so it seems to be that seemed to be the home place, the homestead for Abraham's family. Abraham was told by God to pack all his things and to leave. And to me, just comprehending that, what kind of obedient faith that Abraham must have had is almost unfathomable and unthinkable for me. I mean, just imagine if God came down and spoke to you and said for you to leave everything you're doing now, and I just want you to go this way. I want you to go east. We would probably have a million and one questions in our mind. I know I would. Of course, I always have a million and one questions about everything. My wife kids me all the time about asking a bunch of questions, and she got on to me because every time we went to doctor's visits, I asked more questions than she did. And it really had nothing to do pertain with my body. It was everything to do about pregnancy. So I just had a gazillion questions. I'm a very inquisitive person. I can't imagine what Abraham would have been thinking to just say, okay, I'm gone. I would have had a bunch of questions. God, why do you want me to go? God, where are we going? How long is it going to take us to get there? Do I need to pack certain things to make sure that we've got things taken care of for our trip? I'm a very planned, very strategically oriented kind of person, it seems to be. Monica and I are both very list makers, so I'd be asking God, okay, is there a list of things I need to make sure that we take to make sure that we are okay for this trip, for this journey? Not Abraham. In fact, it seems to indicate the scriptures do at least that Abraham, upon the commandment of God, went immediately, packed up his things, and got on the road as quick as possible. Talk about an obedient faith. It's not just the fact of being obedient because you've been commanded what to do. It's not just because you've listened to that action, but it's actually even more than that. It's because you act. Obedience is not merely listening. Obedience is not merely understanding a commandment. But in fact, obedience is action based upon the commandment of God. Abraham did that. And not only did Abraham just immediately act, but Abraham had a mindset in knowing that God would make sure and fulfill and keep those promises that he gave to him. You look there in Genesis chapter 12, it's not just a promise that all generations would be blessed by him, that God would bless those who bless Abraham, he would curse those who curse Abraham. But you go further through the promise of God unto Abraham is that he would have this land that would be his own. Abraham went, I wouldn't say blindly, he walked by faith. And it was Abraham's faith which provided him the assurance that once he reached that destination, that God would keep his promise. The obedient faith that we see in Abraham in leaving his country, in leaving his family, is an obedient faith that should be understood by all to show reliance, that by that kind of faith, we show reliance on our God. Abraham's not only magnified and applauded for his faith in leaving his country, more importantly, he is, I think at least, this seems to be a little more important, and it touches a little bit more close to home now that I'm a father. He is applauded and he's commended because he offered his only son. If you were to read this story in any other kind of book or maybe even a fictional dialogue, some of you would probably be scratching your head as to why anybody would rely on some person or being that they have never heard or they've never seen before to command them to go and sacrifice their only son. I mean, just imagine you got a telephone call one day. And it was from someone that you had heard, like the president. The president. You've got a phone call from the president, and you've heard about him. You know about his power. You know about everything that he can do. You know about what he is, the support that he's got. You know about the constitutional authority to do things to protect our country and protect our nation. He calls you and says that you must sacrifice your pet dog in order for this nation to be saved. Some of you may not have pet dogs. Some of you may hate dogs. So that may not emphasize or impact you at all. Let's just say your pet, your cat or your dog. Maybe we got cat and dog lovers. We would say, no way. Are you kidding? You know, President, are you on some kind of drug? You know, because this makes no sense whatsoever as to what you're telling me. You're trying to test my patriotism by me sacrificing my pet animal. It doesn't make sense. Let's flip it even further. Say, God came to you and said, you know, I know you're faithful. I know who you are. I know you've been with me before. You've proven yourself before, time and time again. I understand that. But at this point in time, I want you to offer your only son to me as a sacrifice. I can't fathom what my reaction or response would be. I can't. But you see, that's exactly what happened to Abraham. Look in Genesis chapter 22 with me real quickly. I don't have time to dwell too much on this passage, unfortunately. I don't want to get too ingrained on the parallels, especially between Genesis chapter 22 and John 3. Chapter, you know, verse 16 about God giving his only son. There's a great parallels there. A lot of that's called type and shadows of the Old Testament and New Testament, kind of foreshadowing things to come, things that are very similar so the people would understand where they were coming from and what was going on even in the New Testament with God and what his sacrifice. But if you look just at the basic principle, and understand, Abraham didn't fully comprehend the coming of Christ. Okay, so he doesn't have that to really in his mind to ingrain and to think about that, hey, you know, this is the same thing God went through. Okay, we can kind of go back there and make that parallel now. Okay, we can look back. Hindsight's 20/20. We can look back and see the parallels between Abraham and our God in heaven, giving up their son and sacrificing, and what an amazing and incredible sacrifice that must be. But in chapter 22, on face value, Abraham is approached by God. And it says there, it came about after these things. And these things, of course, before that are the, I referred to about Isaac being born. He was born finally to Abraham and Sarah. And then you see covenant with Abimelech there in the latter part of chapter 21. And that Abraham spent some time in the land of the Philistines. That's the end of chapter 21, leading into chapter 22. So that's all these things that we're talking about here. It says, now after these things, God tested Abraham, and he said unto him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. He said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. And then you see verse 3. Very interesting. If you were to flip back and forth, we just looked at Genesis chapter, I think it's 17, right? Dealing with the my pages are sticking together here. The it wasn't 17; it was 12, I think. When Abraham was leaving My Bible has this same two-letter word at the beginning of verse 4 in chapter 12 and the beginning of verse 3 in chapter 22. So. Very important, I think, two-letter little word for us, because what it shows is a connection between the commandment and the obedience to the commandment. So you see there in verse chapter 22, verse 3, so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son. He split wood for the burnt offering, and he arose, went to the place of which God had told him. Go on down there, you see verse 5, he tells his men there to stay where he was. They're going to go up, they're going to worship, and they're going to come back. Verse 6, he took the wood of the burnt offering for the burnt offering. He took Isaac his son, he took a knife, he took the fire with him, and he and his son walked on together. Verse 7, I can't imagine my son looking up at me and saying this. Of course, I have a daughter. Sons are supposed to be tougher. Either way, I think it would melt my heart. I can't imagine and think about, those of you who have sons can probably fathom or think about how this would feel to have the little boy look up at you and say this. He said, my father, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? See, Abraham had evidently done enough teaching for little Isaac for him to understand the importance of sacrifice already. He understood what it meant to sacrifice to God. He understood that when you sacrifice to God, it wasn't just a matter of wood and fire, but it was also that we had to have something to put on it. And at this point, Isaac says, hey, Dad, where is it? Can you imagine the gut check of Abraham at this point? You want to talk about true testing of faith? You want to talk about really what it means to test someone to see if they are truly dedicated to you? Think about the lesson of Abraham. You know, I think oftentimes we get so caught up in what we believe are our trials and our tribulations in life, and we forget that it could be so much worse. Put yourselves in Abraham's shoes. Walking up that mountain of Moriah, going, for all you know, to sacrifice your only son. You talk about a test, that's a test. And Abraham not only had the test of packing up his things and leaving that morning from his house and from his tent, leaving his wife behind. We aren't really told whether he told his wife what was going on or not. I think that's interesting to think about. You know, did he tell Sarah what he was doing? I don't know. I'm not sure I would have. I mean, I'll tell you this. I've learned in my few years of marriage, it's a whole lot easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. So in my opinion, in this point in time, I'm sure Abraham's a whole lot more knowledgeable than me. And you're talking about something even more serious. I'm not trying to make light of it. But I can almost guarantee you, I think, 99% chance he didn't tell Sarah what was going to go down there in Mount Moriah. He was going to tell her after the fact. Now, I think after the fact, he probably may not even have had to tell her, except, hey, this is what happened, but here's Isaac, he's still alive. Because if you read through the passage, you see his faith and his dedication and the result of what happens there. We'll get to it in just a second. But the testing of Abraham's faith is crucial, I think, in us understanding what kind of a man he was. And in fact, that he would pack up all things, that he would follow God's commands here, again, to the T, and do what God had said. God tested Abraham. Of course, again, Abraham listened to God, as I said. Again, Abraham did not question God. It's very similar to before. There's no questions here. Well, God, why my son? You know, why can't I just go get one of the most perfect lambs I've ever seen in my life? God, why is that not acceptable for the sacrifice? But even more importantly, I think, in this story, what really shows his faith throughout all this is Abraham knew in the end that everything was going to be fine. You see, Abraham's faith was so strong, he knew God would provide in the end. Now, we aren't really exactly sure what he means by his statement to Isaac. But of course, as I said before, Isaac says, hey, Dad, where is the lamb for sacrifice? And Abraham's response in verse 8 is this: God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. Abraham's faith knew that God himself would provide a lamb for sacrifice. Now, does this mean an actual physical lamb? I would say probably yes, if you wanted my interpretation of this. It could be figuratively speaking there of Abraham saying, hey, he's going to provide for this sacrifice, my son. You know, he's going to provide something for the sacrifice. It may be that he was going to provide, that Isaac was indeed going to be that lamb for the sacrifice. I mean, he was the firstling of Abraham. He was a pure and unblemished firstling. He was a child. And as Hebrews 11 kind of refers to, over in Hebrews 11 verse 19, it refers to that Abraham had the faith and the knowledge that God could have even risen him from the dead. He could have even brought Isaac back had Abraham gone through with the sacrifice and had killed his son as he had been instructed by God. We don't really know exactly what Abraham's thought process was here in verse 8 of chapter 22, but we do know this. His faith was enough for him to know that God would provide for him in the end. He had no doubts. He had no concerns. He had no worries. But that in the end, that God would provide for him. Of course, we know the ending of the story. As they got there on the top of Mount Moriah, they laid the wood around. They came to the place there. They built that altar, arranged the wood. And at that point, faithful Abraham bound his son. I can't talk about how much admiration I have for this faithful father. That he loved his son so much. This is a son they had waited for years and years to have. But because God had given him a command, because God requested and demanded that he do this, because Abraham had his faith that God was God, that God was supreme, he was all-powerful, he should be worshipped, he should be glorified at all other expenses, he bound his own son in preparation to sacrifice him. God stopped that arm from coming down and killing Isaac on the altar. That ram showed up in the bushes, and it was sacrificed instead. But what you see is, as the response of Abraham shows us, that with faith, we show God that we are have the assurance that things will take care of itself. That God will be the one who ultimately watches out for things, and God will be the one who makes sure that our lives are taken care of. What are some of the lessons, real quickly, that we can learn from Abraham? These will be quick. When we are obedient, when we are those who have this obedient faith in life, God will reward us for following his directions. We can have that assurance today in our faithful lives, that when we are faithful in our obedience to him, that God will reward us. Now, it may not always be on this earth. There are some rewards we have on this earth for faithful obedience. There are things such as love for each other, as we read about in God's word, that it is something we gain from obedience. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 2. We understand that we can also receive recognition as being one of God's servants while we are still living. It's one of those things we can gain by being faithfully obedient. It's something that people look at us, not that we're trying to flaunt it, not that we're trying to be boastful or full of pride and then saying, hey, we're pious people, you know, we're faithfully obedient to God. That's not it at all. That's another whole wrong attitude, and that has nothing to do with obedience. It has to do with pride and selfishness. But when we are doing those things that God commands, we will be observed and will be commended even among those who are living as people who are faithfully obedient and they are servants of God. Over in Romans chapter 6 is a great little discourse there about who we are enslaved to. And the point of the matter there is that Paul makes to the Romans is that really there's two choices there. You can either be the servant of God or you can be the servant of the world, or man, or mammon, or whatever other way, or Satan, I guess is another way to say it, because he is the ruler of the world. You got a choice to make there, and it is by the acts of obedience for which you choose which side you are going to be a servant or a slave to. And you are recognized by that in your life. You will be recognized by who you follow and what you do. 1 Peter 1:22 talks about that the obedience of God actually brings about the purification of our souls. Acts 5, verse 32 deals with that if those who are obedient will receive the Holy Spirit, the gift of the Holy Spirit. And it is something that can be, of course, you have a whole debate whether that's talking about the miraculous or non-miraculous. At this point, I don't think that's part of our discussion. But the point of the matter is there are certain things we can gain through obedience to God and His commands while still living. But more importantly than all those things, God will reward us eternally based on our obedience to Him. The greatest reward possible would be eternal life with God in heaven. And as we see, John 3:36, Hebrews chapter 5, verses 8 through 10, our eternal destination depends on our obedience. So Christians, what we realize is that there will be a reward for those of us who obey, just like Abraham. There was a reward for Abraham when he obeyed God. When he left his country and went to another country, he gained a land for his people. He gained a blessing for his people. And it wasn't just for his people too. It was actually a blessing for all of posterity, for all of mankind. There was a reward given for the obedience there. Also, what we can learn from Abraham is that God will keep his promise. God will keep his promises. God has kept his word throughout all the history of the world. Think about last week. He said there was going to be a flood, and there was a flood. God said, I will bring destruction on Sodom and Gomorrah. There was destruction on Sodom and Gomorrah. God does not waver from his word. God keeps those promises, keeps those things which he has said he will do for us. Hebrews 6:18 and 1 John chapter 1, verses 5 through 6 deal with that. There's no lying in God. God is truth. 1 John 1, that passage there, verses 5 through 6, talks about that God is light and in him is no darkness. There's nothing that corrupts God. There's no lying. There's no falsehood. There's no deceit when it comes to God. If God says he will do it, he will keep his promise. How does that impact us? Well, there's been promises made to us. If we follow after him, we can have eternal life. That's what God has promised to us. And we know that if we fulfill those things, if we go through with those things, if we are faithful in our lives, God will keep those promises to us. He has promised us that he will make sure that there will not be anything that we cannot bear. We can be assured that that promise will ring true. If we are faithful to him, he has told us that he will answer our prayers. He told us to cast our care upon him. He will give those things to us. Real quickly here, finally. God will provide for us in times of trial. I've already alluded to this before. 1 Corinthians 10:13. God's not going to allow us to be tempted beyond anything which we can handle. We can be assured to that if we are faithful. And God will reward us for staying faithful in times of trials and temptations, as we read in James chapter 1 and verse 12. Listen, bottom line, let's have an obedient faith like Abraham, making sure that not only do we hear the commands of God, we listen to them. They don't go in one ear, out the other. But not only do we listen to them, we act upon them, because that is the only way we can have obedient faith, like good old Father Abraham. Appreciate y'all's attention this morning.